You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 16th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us here on ESPN 106.7. Another beautiful day in the Auburn Opelika area. Lots to get to on today's show. Lots of college football continuing our reactions from week 3 of the season. We'll talk some more about some teams that are maybe surprising to some, disappointing for others. Also talk more Auburn football as we slowly start turning our focus towards Oklahoma this weekend in Norman. Plus we have some high school stuff to go over as well. All sorts of fun things to get to on this Tuesday afternoon. Christian, how are you, sir? Happy Tuesday to you.
Happy Tuesday. Yeah, you mentioned it. A whole lot of college football talk that we get to discuss. We got SEC conversations. We got head coaching conversations. There's coaches that no longer have jobs. There's essentially coaches that are backhanded compliment asking to not have a job at certain schools because all they do is win. And if they don't want me, that's fine. I'll move on. We're going to discuss a whole lot of that here on the show today. We're talking about possible changes to our college football playoff predictions with Auburn's next three games being with teams in the top 10 to make the college football playoff. Conversations with that. Yeah, before I get to sit down with Coach Buster Daniel, head coach for Lee Scott Academy at 2:30, then we get to talk a little bit of high school as well. All that coming up here in a jam-packed hour number one.
Yep, phone lines are open today if you want to be a part of the show. We'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. You can be a part of the show. Let us know your thoughts on Auburn football, SEC football, college football, across the landscape. Again, you can give us a call, 334-321-1390. And that's where we start today's show, with more reactions from week 3 of the season, because we kind of rapid fire hit on these yesterday, Christian, but now we have a chance to dive into these a little bit more. And some of these results that might mean a little bit more than what they did on paper. And I think we have to start with the idea that you said two head coaches have been fired after week 3 of the season. It's wild to think about the fact that Virginia Tech fires their head coach and UCLA fires their head coach. Virginia Tech gets rid of their head coach after Old Dominion goes in there to Blacksburg,
yeah,
and not just upsets Virginia Tech, not just beats Virginia Tech. Folks, they embarrassed Virginia Tech. And I want to go ahead and jump out in front of this right now. I've already seen some Virginia Tech fans on the interwebs that have said, bring him home. Bring him home. Bring our man. Bring the family name back to Virginia Tech.
Wow.
I've already seen people say, bring Shane Beamer back to Virginia Tech. I'm going to go ahead and burst that bubble real quick. It ain't happening.
No.
It ain't happening. Let's go ahead and accept the idea as Shane Beamer ain't leaving the SEC in South Carolina to go to Virginia Tech.
He'll go to Florida before he goes to Virginia Tech.
Exactly.
Man,
be a great hire for them.
It would be a
run from Billy Napier. So Virginia Tech fires their guy, and UCLA did the exact same thing. Deshaun Foster out at UCLA.
40 minutes before.
Yeah, they were literally an hour apart on a Sunday. It was like, yeah, we've seen enough. We should have known it was never going to happen for Deshaun Foster when he took the stage at his first Big Ten Media Days and made an absolute fool of himself. That should have been the moment where they were like, yeah, we probably should just go ahead and move on. And what a disaster it is in Los Angeles. The fact that they just fired their head coach, 15 games into his career there at UCLA, just year two. And they said, yeah, we'll pay him, get him out of town. You've paid Nico Iamaleava over $1 million and he sucks. And your biggest rival, USC, looks pretty darn good in Southern Cal right now. I mean, which one of these is a bigger dumpster fire, Christian? Is it UCLA firing their head coach? Is it Virginia Tech firing their head coach? Or is it a program that maybe hasn't fired their head coach yet?
I mean, of those two, do you want to say that it's Virginia Tech and Brent Pry just simply because you feel like over the past couple of years, Virginia Tech's at least been decent enough? You feel like as soon as Chip Kelly left UCLA, he's now with the Raiders, and that offense looked despicable last night. You feel like that was the last time that UCLA was relevant, right? With the fake spike against Texas A&M in that game, or was it Texas A&M that did the fake spike? One of the two. But that was the last time that you feel like you heard about UCLA, so you don't think that news comes with as much surprise. It's unfortunate because they play in one of the best stadiums in college football. But from historic
stadiums, that's a word, yeah.
One of the most memorable college football stadiums. But Brent Pry and Virginia Tech, you feel like they've worked so hard on trying to bring that upbringing back to the ACC. They'd usually have that one upset a year that would keep them relevant enough to get enough recruits. ESPN would find a way to have one night game a year there in Blacksburg to be able to show everybody, enter Sandman. But now if you're at the point where if you're Metallica, man, ask for it back. Ask for the rights back. They don't deserve it.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree. And we talk about this every year because there's always coaches being fired in the middle of the season. Normally you see this in like late October, early November, maybe even mid-November too.
Coincidentally
right?
Placed with a bye week in there.
Yeah, it just happens to work out that way. And I'm still not a fan of firing head coaches in season. I know there are some benefits, but I don't necessarily like the idea of it. But this is wild to me. This is wild to say 3 weeks into the season, we've seen enough. And with Deshaun Foster at UCLA, it was pretty bad. They lost their first three games, including two at home in the Rose Bowl, also going on the road losing to UNLV, and the saying as old as time, the straw that broke the camel's back here, the one that put the Bruins in the ground, was the idea that you let New Mexico walk into the Rose Bowl, get a win, and take a $1.2 million check with them. That's pretty much a fireable offense, if you ask me.
It's a pretty solid handshake if you're New Mexico.
And it wasn't. This was, again, this was not a last-second Hail Mary field goal-winning play either. This was a butt-whooping.
35-10.
And
could have been a lot worse than that. We talk about the box score peepers, the box score viewers that look at it, and it's like, okay, well, that game looked to be pretty close, but then you go and watch it, and sometimes it's like, okay, this game was more of a blowout than it looked like. Or, yes, this was a blowout, but the game was a little bit closer. I use Illinois-Duke as my example of a game that I think was closer than the scoreboard ended up showing because of the three back-to-back-to-back turnovers that led to 21 points late in the third, early in the fourth quarter, where it was a much more competitive game. This final score was 35-10, and we got to watch some of that game. Was that the Friday night game after high school, or was it just that really late Saturday night
Which game
that was by itself? UCLA, New Mexico.
Was that late Saturday or was that late Friday? I can't remember.
I don't remember which one it was.
I can't remember.
Regardless, though, we got to watch the back half of this.
I think it was the late Friday. It was the late Friday night.
Yeah, it was right when we got home after watching, or after calling high school games.
Yeah, it was late Friday night. And we were like, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, New Mexico put up 21 points in the fourth quarter, again, to make it look worse, but it was absolute domination from start to finish. I mean, the inability to move the ball on offense if you're UCLA, and the fact you give up 298 rushing yards.
Yeah, that's not good.
To move to 0-3. It's just, I mean, sometimes you feel like there's a recipe there where you can find little bits and pieces of success. For those that are on social media, go look at UCLA Barstool on Twitter. A fantastic account, because they've talked all about how it's like, last week, this was last week after the UNLV loss, it's like, I had fans clowning me, saying negative things. What do you want me to say now?
Yeah.
And then the Big Sky Conference tweeted something that said, somebody said, I think UCLA is competing for their next bid in the Big Sky Conference. Big Sky quote tweeted it and said, no, thank you.
Yeah, we're good.
And
no,
then
thanks.
UCLA Barstool responded with, like, this is a top 10 most embarrassing tweet ever.
Yeah, I have a buddy that covers UCLA out in Los Angeles, and all summer long he was hyping up Nico and getting excited because it was a big deal, and that has turned so quickly. He was like, yep, this is terrible. We're ruined. What talk of basketball now.
How much do you think that hurts even more? Because you know that UCLA went to go watch Joey Aguilar play.
Yeah.
They went to go watch that, and all of a sudden you're halfway through the first quarter, and you're sitting there like, holy cow.
Yeah, which I don't think Joey Aguilar was going to say this UCLA team, but...
No, but...
Yes, he's
adding
much better.
To the fire.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And so, wild stuff there. Two head coaches in P4 programs have already been fired. There are tons of links and rumors and predictions on who the next head coaches are going to be at those respective programs.
There's probably betting lines for it.
Oh, I'm sure there are. And we're not going to go down that route for now, just because most people don't truly care who the head coach is at UCLA or Virginia Tech around here. But how
AP poll voters do, though.
I'm sure they do. Half of them don't even know those coaches got fired this week. Where I want this conversation to go, though, is what I alluded to a little bit earlier. There are several teams who lost in week three, or even won ugly in week three, that haven't fired their head coaches, but very well could at some point, or could move on, or a coach could leave. There are several programs that have a lot of questions to be answered over the next several weeks. Florida is one of those, after having every chance to win that game against LSU because your defense absolutely balled out. But DJ Lagway looking like Jeremy Johnson out there because he just could not throw it to the right colored jersey. 5 interceptions for your quarterback. Man, you've got to throw a lifeline. You've got to throw the vest out there. Throw the circular tube looking thing. What do they call that? The donut thing they have on the side of the boat that they throw in. The lifesaver thing.
Sure.
Throw it at him. Get that man out of the game. He cannot continue to be in that situation. And Florida loses because they lose by double digits because of the pick six. This was a 13-10 loss, I think.
It's called a life buoy, officially, or a life ring.
I think life rings a little. I think of a buoy as the one that sits out in the water by itself. But regardless, DJ Lagway needed anything. I don't care if you throw him a backpack to save himself. That man was drowning.
Names also include ring buoy, lifesaver, life donut, life preserver, and life belt.
I think I said a few of those. So I was right. People knew what I was talking about. I described it good enough for somebody that gets paid to do it for a living. That's what DJ Lagway needed. This was a disaster in Baton Rouge. And the fact that Florida had any chance to win this game is truly a miracle. So I put Billy Napier in that list of his job is in question. I'm not saying that Sark is in trouble at Texas, but Texas is in trouble right now. Sark ain't losing his job. That's not where I'm going here. But Texas has a lot of concerns, I think. I think Shane Beamer has some questions to answer in South Carolina. I think Luke Fickell's in trouble at Wisconsin after losing badly to Alabama. There's some serious concerns going on right now, Christian, in college football with several head coaches at several P4 programs.
Vanderbilt, maybe not this year, but could be a little worried with Clark Lee.
In the
complete opposite way of, yeah.
Apparently there's going to be an opening in Clemson, South Carolina.
My goodness.
Apparently there could be an opening in Clemson, South Carolina.
And who would have thought? Who would have thought? I mean, the conversation's been flirted around for forever. But, yeah, Dabo Swinney did not hold back on the media here today talking about his 1-2 season. It's absolutely insane.
We'll talk about that when we come back.
Yeah.
Because if you have not seen this, he's one of two head coaches that had a little rant against the media. Brian Kelly strikes again.
I was about to say, I knew his was the other one of...
I guess he apologized yesterday or today. I think he did. I think Brian Kelly was in the right. But Dabo Swinney having his little temper tantrum today, didn't really have that one on my rundown today. Didn't have that prepared to see that on social media. We continue this conversation when we come back. Give us a call. Which head coach in college football is in trouble? Who's got to answer question? Who needs to turn it around? We want to hear from you. 334-321-1390 is the call-in number. You could shoot us a text as well. 334-784-1067. We answer those questions and more right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking coaches who may be in trouble in college football after just 3 weeks of the 2025 season. We want to hear from you. Who's your pick? Which coaches could be on the hot seat right now in P4 college football? Give us a call, 334-321-1390. Or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And we mentioned a coach that seemed to have had a perfect job, a lifelong job, and one that he would never lose. But Dabo Swinney had some comments today, responding to the media after a 1-2 start, a very shaky 1-2 start, losing to LSU in the opener, barely beating Troy at home, and then losing to Georgia Tech this weekend. Dabo Swinney popped off on the media today and called out Clemson, its fans, and the media that cover them. I want you to take a listen to this two-minute clip from a national championship-winning coach and his response if Clemson wants to move on from him.
If Clemson's tired of winning, they can send me on my way, but I'm going to go somewhere else and coach. I ain't going to the beach. Hell, I'm 55. I got a long way to go. Y'all going to have to deal with me for a while. I got a long way to go. I'm just getting going. I'm just now good enough to be a head coach. I'm just now figuring it out. So we'll be around a while. Let's hang in there.
You're only 55.
That's it, man. Do I look 70? Yeah, I think I'm. That's about right around the age. I think Coach Stallings was. I think he was maybe. He was right around that age, 55, 56, something like that when he came to Alabama. I think Coach Saban was.
How about that? And there's more to it. There's more to that. But Dabo Swinney says, and I quote, "If Clemson wants to move on from me, so be it.
Yeah,
I'll go coach somewhere else." From the head coach of Clemson, Dabo Swinney. Yeah. My God.
Says, quote, "If Clemson's tired of winning, they can send me on my way. But I'm going to go somewhere else and coach. I ain't going to the beach. Hell, I'm 55. I got a long way to go. So we'll see what we'll see what happens.
If they're tired of winning, they can get rid of me." I mean, when I saw that this morning, I genuinely was speechless. And didn't think it was real. I said, is this AI? Come on, is this fake?
That, or you saw the quote and you thought it was one of those troll accounts.
Yeah, or clickbait or something like that, yeah. Or clipped out of context. But no, you can go listen to the 5 minutes before that and the 5 minutes after that. And he meant every word. And I'm curious, Christian, on what his response will be with the backlash that I'm sure he's receiving at this very moment as we speak. But where does that come from if you're Dabo Swinney? I mean, I'll be honest, shame on you. Shame on you for treating your organization, your school, your athletic department, and your fan base. Shame on you for treating them that way. because they demand better from you as a national championship winning coach who clearly has not caught up with the times, because they demand a better start than 1-2 after losing to LSU, almost being upset by Troy, which is unacceptable for a P4 program. Love Troy, they're doing great things, but sorry, you can't be down by double digits in your home to Troy. And then watching Georgia Tech do what they did to you. And then have the audacity to stand there on a Tuesday and say, well, if they don't want me, they can get rid of me. I'll go somewhere else and coach.
Yeah.
What a joke.
I've done what I needed to do. I've won you a national championship. I don't have to prove you anything else.
That's what it sounds like.
I'm too good for any sort of criticism. And I know that there's just about a yearly Dabo Swinney press conference that kind of gets people up in arms, but it's usually just about something within the program or something that the media says and how he answers to the criticism. But this feels like you're bringing criticism onto yourself. And regardless of if he thinks he's right or not, think about if, and this is not speaking specifically at anybody at Auburn, obviously, but imagine if Hugh Freeze walked into a press conference today or last year and was like, you know what? I've already won elsewhere. You can just let me go. It doesn't really matter anymore. If you want me gone, I'll leave. What would the you wouldn't know what to do, and the fan base would not tolerate it.
It comes off as spoiled to me. It comes off as a spoiled brat, is what it sounds like to me. For a guy that has done more for Clemson football than any coach in their program history. But it comes off as a way of, yeah, I mean,
you're too good for criticism, and you're not going to take any sort of, maybe not advice, but any sort of, you're not going to open your ears to any sort of conversation because you've already won. And I'm a winner. I've already proven that.
Yeah. Oh, I just texted Steve, our boss, who is a huge Clemson fan. I just texted him the clip and I said, I need your thoughts on this ASAP. And he just walked out the door. I was going to try and grab him, because I want the Clemson fans' perspective on this, and he may or may not have seen it, so I'll give you his thoughts when he gets back to us. But I just don't understand. Not that Dabo's out the door. I mean, not that they're going to fire him yet or have even thought about firing him, but it's like, man, why would you burn this bridge that you've built, you've taken so long to build?
And you've taken so much heat for building.
Yeah, in your own way. But clearly, clearly, you're not where you need to be. Your program's not where it needs to be. You're not winning football games, Dabo. And we came into this season, you and I both said, they're one of the most talented teams in the country. Clearly, we were wrong. Clearly, we were wrong about Clemson and the talent that they have and their head coach who seems to have lost it. I just don't understand why you would call out the organization that's given you everything you've wanted. They've given you everything you could possibly imagine as a man, as a head coach, as a leader, as a husband, as a father, everything. Clemson has given everything to you. He's earned it, and he's won, and he's done great things for them. But why in the hell would you go after them and say, if you're tired of winning, that's fine, just fire me. I'll go win somewhere else.
Yeah, make it seem like the strings that you have are just emotionless.
You ain't Nick Saban. I'm sorry, you're not. He's about the only one that's ever been able to step up there and say that. And guess what? He didn't. Saban didn't say that. Belichick didn't say that to the Patriots. I know that hasn't been the greatest relationship, but you get what I'm saying. Dabo is really good. He's really, really good. But he's not God. And he spoke like that today.
Yeah.
And I'm not clearly a Clemson fan. I'm not. But that rubs me the wrong way. Because guess what? In the next 10 years, let's say Dabo and Clemson split right now today. They split. Clemson goes one way. Dabo Swinney goes the other. I'm betting on Clemson as an organization, as a program, to win a national championship before I bet on Dabo Swinney to win a national championship. I don't care where he goes. I don't care if he goes to Alabama. I would bet on Clemson as a program without Dabo Swinney to win a national championship in the next decade before I would bet on Dabo Swinney to walk out of Clemson, South Carolina, and go win somewhere else.
simply because when you look at things and how they work, you see what the Clemson fan base, how they felt about the lack of NIL, the lack of recruiting, the lack of the transfer portal with Clemson over the past couple of years, and that frustration, if he goes and takes another big P4 job, there's no way that frustration is not going to immediately follow into the next fan base, rather than Clemson at the point of if he does walk away, it's, okay, we're getting that new start. We're getting somebody that, again, Clemson would make the big hire of, okay, that's somebody that understands how today's college football works. And you hate to make it sound like that, because you as a college football fan that we both are, you almost hope that it worked out for Dabo, so that way it can almost lead that precedent of, okay, it doesn't have to be the $40 million rosters that go and win football games and national championships. I'm not saying that that's everything, but you hoped that that wouldn't be the case and Clemson could go and win it and you'd feel so much better about what college football could be because you've seen two polar opposites. But when you go out there and refuse one thing and you start 1-2, and essentially say that you're emotionless to Clemson. If you want to cut ties, so be it. I'll go coach anywhere else, and I'll go try and beat Clemson. This doesn't feel like it's the right way to go about anything.
No, it feels like a losing fight for Dabo Swinney. It rubs me the wrong way. And again, I don't care one thing about Clemson. I really don't. But when you've got a legend of the game who's tearing down the house that he built, just seems kind of wrong to me. But that's just one man's opinion. We'll take our bottom of the hour break, come back, and flip gears over to high school a little bit. Christian, we'll sit down with the head coach of Lee Scott Academy football, Buster Daniel. He joins us coming up next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Tuesday edition of On the Line, and that means we get to continue our high school segments with Lee Scott Academy. And we have Coach Buster Daniel joining us on the phone lines. Once again, Coach, we appreciate your time as always. And it's crazy to think that this weekend marks the halfway point of the regular season, but what better way to do it than 4-0?
Oh, it sounds great. I was talking to Coach this morning. I said the exact same thing. You know, it's hard to believe that we're in week 5 of our season already. Time flies when you're having fun, man. And, you know, being around these kids and watching them play and how they're growing up is really, really fun.
Well, Lee Scott Academy goes on the road for the first time this season last Friday night to the Bobcats of Beulah, where you pick up a 70-16 win. Before we dive into the game itself, what did you want to see or possibly learn from your team as they played away from Judd Scott Field for the first time this season?
Well, I really wanted to see, you know, how they reacted on a road game because, you know, second half of our season, we got 4 out of 5 on the road. So I wanted to see how they reacted, how they traveled, you know, how they prepared. And, you know, it turned out to be a good night for us. So they responded well and, you know, they checked all the boxes I was trying to check.
If you're a simple box score viewer, something that we talk about a lot on the show, where this game looked completely at hand from the opening kickoff, but watching the game, we know that's not exactly how that happened. Lee Scott with turnovers on each of the first two drives. This team was down 10-0 5 minutes into the contest. What were you telling your guys on the sideline at this point in the game?
Well, you know, it, like you said, it didn't start the way we wanted it to. You know, we came out first two drives, turned the ball over. We haven't faced much adversity this year, so that was good for us. You know, we tried to settle them down on the sideline that everything was going to be okay. We just had to get back in our game plan and just relax. And, you know, that's kind of what we did. You know, after the first drive, you know, with the interception, they go down and score and, you know, come back out in the second drive and same thing and throw an interception. They go down and our defense bows the neck, you know, and just holds them to a field goal. So, you know, that gave us a little spark right there, and then we were able to come back and score and make it a 10-7 game and then, you know, just take over from there. But, you know, it was good to see our guys, how they reacted to adversity, and we had some. We haven't had that, you know, so far, but I was proud of our guys, how they settled in and finished the game.
You mentioned that touchdown. You get the ball back and give the ball to Preston Hughley immediately on a pop pass, which he takes to the house. How much comfort does he bring to Max Hammer, this offensive line, and just the offensive unit as a whole?
Oh, Preston's doing a great job this year. He's a, you know, and he, as well as a couple other guys, are different guys than they were last year. You know, Preston played well last year, but he has really excelled this year. He's worked hard over the summer, worked hard all fall camp and every day in practice to get where he's at. And it's exciting when he gets the ball in his hands. You know, we like to see him catch it and get upfield. And he runs hard and he has good moves and makes guys miss in open field. And, you know, he's doing a great job for us.
You then get a stop. You get a score to go up 14-10. They then respond with a big-time play from their receiver to go up 16-14 after the extra point was missed. How do you game plan for a team like Beulah that doesn't necessarily want to have those 10-play, 6-minute drives? Instead, they want to take that chunk play, kind of take the top off of your defense, because this coach was already the third 2-play touchdown drive of the game between the two teams.
Yeah, you know, I think what you're asking about is the big play the receiver made. You know,
yes.
You know, number two, he was an electrifying player. He's a good player. You know, they throw the ball up, and we had the ball in our hands for an interception, and he just simply took it away from us.
Yeah,
and you know, went the distance. And you know, you don't game plan for stuff like that. Like I said, we had the ball, and he just made a play. And you know, we just had to score with him. You know, we had to get back on the field and do our job and just simply stay calm and try to, you know, put the game plan in and what we had. And, you know, and we did that, but that was a big play by him. Disappointing for us. You know, Easton came over the sideline and couldn't figure out how the kid got the ball from him, but he did, you know, and he did his job. But Easton, I talked with Easton about it. He said, yeah, coach, I just didn't rip it down. And, of course, that's what it was. So, you know, the next time he got opportunity, he brought the ball into his stomach and, you know, made an interception. But, yeah, I mean, you don't plan for stuff like that. But the kid made a play, and, you know, we just had to stay with our game plan.
We're talking with Lee Scott Academy's head football coach, Buster Daniel. Lee Scott then gets the ball back with 3 minutes to play before the half, and you're able to double dip before the half to make it 28-16. You mentioned Max Hammer had a couple of those uncharacteristic throws earlier in the game that led to these turnovers. But what was said to him by you or by the team to build back up that confidence that we saw from the second quarter on?
Well, we just reminded him that he was a really good football player. And, you know, all of the interception wasn't all his fault. We had somebody run a wrong route, which threw things in a bind. But, you know, I just explained to him, you know, that if that happens, and it's going to happen in high school football, it's going to happen in college. Kids are going to mess up. But what we can't do is double up on the bad play and just throw it up for grabs. You know, either run the ball or throw it away. And, you know, we had that little conversation about that. And, like, again, Max came back, settled in. He is a really good quarterback, and he finished the game and did a great job for us. I mean, if you look at it, you wouldn't think that he had over 200 yards passing, but I think he did. So, you know, he settled in, he got his head back right, and guys did things the right way. And, you know, he finished and did a good job.
You kick off to start the second half, get the 3-and-out, and then you go on to score 4 touchdowns in 5 minutes, essentially 6 touchdowns in 7 minutes, going back to the second quarter thanks to a fumbled kickoff return. 2 of those Easton Gregory interceptions more than making up for that play that we were talking about earlier. Man, who gave that halftime speech, Coach, and what was said to light the hair on fire for this team?
Well, you know, it's not about a halftime speech because there really wasn't one. We just went in, corrected mistakes, and we talked to them that we go back out, and it's 0-0. That's what we keep trying to talk to them about. You play the game like it's 0-0 tie game, and just go out and do the job and finish the job. But, no, there was no big-time halftime speech. We just got, like I said, correct mistakes, got our guys back in focus, and, you know, just come out and play a better second half.
Lee Scott Academy enjoys the ride home, remaining unbeaten 4-0 and 2-0 in region play this Friday. We're back at home against a really talented Randolph County team. What will fans expect to see from the Tigers this Friday night?
Well, if they remember from last year, he's got the same running back. Kid is outstanding. He is. I think he's got probably 1,000 yards rushing in you know, the first 4 games. He has big play after big play after big play. So, you know, we got to try to contain him. You're not going to stop him because he's a good player. But anyway, he's a guy that we got to try to contain. I got to take care of. His name is Wendell Winston. He's a senior this year. But like I said, last year he had a big game against us. And last week against Dable, he had two plays of 90 yards, one screen and one run, and then he had a reverse field where he went about 50 yards. So, I mean, he's trying to get the big play in. That's what they like to do. So we've got to contain that young man. If we can do that, we got a really good chance of winning the football game. You know, they lost a little bit on the offensive line from last year, but they still have another running back that can also hurt you. But they have two guys that we have got to contain. You know, if somebody else beats us and we stop those two, hey, we'll tip the hat to them. But good football team, really well coached. Coach Pressures does a good job over there. He's been there a long time. They're good at what they do. You know, they run a couple of different offenses. They run the wishbone. They'll run a straight T. They'll run an I. So they're going to come at you and they, you know, try to get on the corner and let him run. But we got to try to contain him. And if we do that, we'll be successful.
This may be something that fans talk a little bit more about than coaches and players, but wanted your perspective on it as well. What is it like going on the road and getting a tough win and then being able to come back home? Does it seem to bring some sort of comfort or confidence level to the rest of the team for that following week or for this entire week in practice, or is it just another game week?
Well, to us, especially coaches, it's just another game week, no matter where we play. You know, before we went on the field the other night, I told them this is like home field. It's the same dimensions, the 120 yards, you know, by 53 and a third yard, whatever it is. So it's a football field. We don't look at it being home or away. We have a job to do, and we got to go out and do it.
A battle of the unbeatens this Friday night as Randolph County heads to Judd Scott Field to take on the Lee Scott Academy Warriors. Pregame starts at 6:30 with myself and Rhett Crum with kickoff at 7 over on the home of Lee Scott Academy football. AU100.3, AUHits.com, and the Radio Alabama app. Coach, we appreciate your time here once again this afternoon, and we're looking forward to a really fun weekend on Friday night.
Sounds good. Thanks for all you do, man, and go Warriors.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate head coach Buster Daniel for Lee Scott Academy football joining Christian, as he does every single week during football season, as the Warriors get ready to come back home. I know you guys, you were hurting really bad after having to go on the road for one ee-wee little bitty game, and now you come back home to make everything fine again.
I don't know. That game felt like four road games.
But you guys are home, though.
We'll get Rhett Crum on the phone lines, and he can defend it. Or if there's any listeners, please send a text to defend us in the on-the-line text box.
I couldn't hear anything, so I can't defend it.
Exactly. Neither could I in my headset. I had somebody essentially calling play-by-play while I was calling play-by-play, so we were calling the same games, but he was half a second behind me using different words. It's like having somebody, it's like you counting, trying to remember numbers, and somebody's like 1, 4, 7, 19, 47, 3, 16, and it's just like message. Yeah, it's essentially how that was. No excuses, though.
Well, now you guys are back home.
Now we're back at Judd Scott Field, and things, man, you just feel so much better. So much better. Lee Scott Academy taking on the Tigers of Randolph County, which is a really, really good team in region play overall, but undefeated in region play. It's a team that knows how to find the end zone, man. We saw that firsthand last year, and it's a team that you heard Coach Buster Daniel say, we'll run the wing T, we'll run the I formation, we'll run almost a little bit of a triple option, and they do it almost with tempo. And so it's things that usually you don't see together, right? When you see that wing T, wishbone, triple option type of offense, you think somebody that's going to try and have 12-minute drives. They're perfectly fine with 10-play, 3-minute drives, because more times than not, the way that they've mastered that, it's going to turn into a chunk play, going to turn into a couple of first downs. They throw the ball when they need to, and It's going to be a whole lot of fun over on Friday night. AU 100.3 is where you need to go. We have pregame at 6:30, kickoff at 7 over at Judd Scott Field.
Yeah, the Auburn High Tigers, we continue playing at home. Second of four in a row after taking down Enterprise last week at the Dock. We get Jag coming in. This was supposed to be in Montgomery, but Jag agreed to move this game to Auburn High, to Duck Sanford. So we do get to play another home game this week. Look, it's mid to late September. It just doesn't feel like it outside. I mean, it's going to be in the 90s again this Friday.
Oh, yeah. My open was another beautiful, hot summer evening.
That's what it feels like, literally. But we're home against Jag this Friday. Pregame 6:30, kickoff at 7 over on Wings 94.3, wingsfm.com, that Radio Alabama app. It is another region game. Tigers are 2-0 in the region, so off to a good start. So we will be at home at Duck Sanford as well. Then we play Moody next week, which is a non-region game, but one that means a lot to Coach Etheridge, being from the Leeds Moody area.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that one. And then Central comes to town in 2 weeks. So unfortunately, I will tell you like it is. Jag is a struggling team. They're a struggling program. They're 0-3 so far this season. Opelika had their way last week. I expect Auburn to do the same and hopefully get some guys healthy, get a lot of dudes in this football game. But we'll talk to Coach Etheridge coming up on Thursday, 3 o'clock here on ESPN. He'll join us live and talk about last week's win over Enterprise and get ready for Jag coming up this Friday. But we have a couple of minutes, and phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show today. 334-321-1390 is the number to give us a call, or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. And I texted the biggest Clemson fan that we know. And in case you missed it, we were talking earlier in the hour about the crybaby rant that Dabo Swinney went on today, calling out Clemson, calling out the organization, the fans and everything, saying if they are tired of winning, if Clemson is tired of winning, they can send me on my way, but I'm going to go somewhere else and coach, is what Dabo Swinney said. I ain't going to the beach, is what he said. I'll go somewhere else. So I texted our general manager, Steve Witten of the Auburn Network, who is a Clemson grad and a Clemson fan, and I said, I need your thoughts on this as soon as possible. And I'm not going to read everything he said. Not that it's bad. It's a pretty detailed message. But I'm going to share some thoughts from a Clemson fan on their thoughts on this Dabo Swinney. And this was the first time he had seen this, okay?
Yeah.
He said, not sure how I feel about it. He makes some good points, and that they've been more successful in the past 15 years than about 95% of the D1 programs. And he's right, right? But our boss, Steve, says, but I don't think it comes off well. He said some good things, but then he should have stopped. He says, I wish he would have realized that with the program, with success, yes, has not been in the national championship conversation since 2020, and it's not what it was, and that he needs to fix it. Talking about Dabo Swinney there. So a Clemson fan is saying that this did not come off well from Dabo Swinney today. From a head coach of a program that hasn't been in the conversation in nearly 5 years. So that should tell you kind of where we're coming from with, like, yeah, maybe you should have said that, Dabo.
Yeah.
Maybe you should clean up your act, Dabo. And maybe you should not get your feelings hurt for having to defend yourself and your football team for being 1-2. In comparison to...
Yes. In comparison to Brian Kelly having to go up on the media both Saturday night and Monday morning to basically go on there and defend his team of questions of, this offense is struggling. What are you going to do? I just don't feel... Is this offense good enough to compete in the college football playoff? And Brian Kelly sits there and kind of throws his hands up. It's like, we just won the football game. We just beat Florida. We just won 20-10. Yes, it wasn't necessarily the prettiest game, but we won the football game. And what he should have said is, dude, we're the number three team in the country. We're 3-0 with a couple pretty impressive wins. Pipe down.
Yeah.
Look at the two comparisons. You have a team that's 1-2 very easily, respectfully, could be 0-3. if Troy could have done anything in the second half versus a team that beat that same team and is 3-0 in with position A, like a ball on the fairway, 280 yards down the middle of the field.
That's where I'm normally at.
Yes. Just the other fairway off to the left or the right, but still in the fairway.
There's always an angle, baby.
Fairway and regulation.
As long as I can see the pin, it doesn't matter.
But that's essentially the comparison.
And here's the difference
in the two coaches.
Here's the thing, though. Even as an undefeated head coach, there are still questions. You are still allowed to be asked certain questions, and especially early in the season. Absolutely. Brian Kelly and LSU, you got to figure it out. The offense is terrible. It's terrible. And you brought Garrett Nussmeier back for this? Yeah, you should have to answer those questions. But Brian Kelly's point on Saturday night where he had his another outrage, and there's been a lot that I haven't agreed with, but this one I defended him. It's, hey, we just won the game. Let's talk about that on Monday.
Yeah.
We're going to meet in the next 48 hours again, media. Let's talk about it then, but why don't you ask me questions about how my team persevered? Why don't you ask me questions about our defense that had five turnovers? Why don't you ask me about the crowd? Why don't you ask me about being 3-0 and starting SEC play 1-0?
And let me have a day or two to go back and watch film and understand what we need to work on. Rather than walking off the field, still being sweaty, and going, yeah, coach, congrats on the win, but...
Right. There's a difference. There's absolutely a difference. And Dabo's comments today, having to defend himself in a program that's 1-2, 3 games in to a team that had, what, second or third best odds to win the national championship? And you lose your big game out of conference, you almost get upset by Troy, and you're 0-1 in ACC play. But yet, how dare you challenge Dabo Sweeney? How dare you question the greatness of Dabo Sweeney?
If Clemson's tired of winning, they're 1-2.
You ain't winning much right now, Dabo. You ain't winning much. Send us your thoughts. What are the betting odds on the next coaching spot that Dabo Sweeney lands? Does anybody want him as their head coach? Sure, somebody would take him. Florida, Bama, UCLA's hiring. Why don't you go out there, Dabo? You'll fit right into Los Angeles, California. My goodness. All right, hour number one's in the book. Stick around. We're talking all things Auburn football coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us on a sunny day in Auburn, Alabama. If you missed any of hour number one, had a lot of fun talking more takeaways from week three of college football. The good, the bad, and a lot of ugly around the country in college football. We talked about some teams that are kind of surprising, other teams that may have some major question marks, and a couple of coaches who have already been canned. We talked about that in the first hour. Plus, Christian talked with Lee Scott Academy's head football coach, Buster Daniel, as they do every Tuesday here on the show. So got some insights on the Warriors, who are now 3-0, 4-0, 4-0 as Lee Scott this year. Two games out of region, two games in region. So those two gentlemen talked about that, previewed Randolph County coming up this Friday night at Judd Scott Field. And then one of us had passionate takes on Dabo Swinney's comments earlier today, and I'll let you go back and figure out which one was fired up about that in the podcast version of the show. So you can do that on our station website, as you can every single day after we get off the air. You can go back and listen to old interviews, old segments, old shows, however you want to do it, in our podcast center on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
I'm saving my rant for when James Franklin is... And then I'll let Jacob go in even more detail.
And I'll have to defend James Franklin because that's my coach, and you don't talk about him that way.
Exactly. That was the point that I was – I'm glad you picked up on what I was putting down. Here in hour number two, we're talking Auburn football. In specific, kind of the next four games as a whole. Again, on Wednesdays, we're really going to dive into, give the deep dive in Oklahoma and that game that's going to be in Norman on Wednesday and Thursday, and obviously the huge conversation on Friday. But right now, just kind of looking after you take a couple steps back, looking at Auburn's next four games, the huge opportunities, the bullets that may have been dodged, the kickoff, or with some of these kickoff times that Auburn is going to, again, in Norman, in College Station. Have the expectations changed on what is acceptable during this stretch? Again, we've talked about what a couple of wins could do. We've talked about if you would take certain wins and certain losses if you given to them. Right now, what does everything look like, and what would you want to see over these next four games? And then a fun little conversation that we had a little bit before the show that we wanted to dive into, and it's about the turnover battle, both on the offensive and the defensive side of the football, and which one is more important, getting turnovers or not turning the football over. So a fun conversation coming up at 3:30. But all of that coming up here in hour number two. As he mentioned, I'm Christian Griffin. He's Jacob Goins. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. The phone lines are open in hour number two if you would like to be a part of the conversation. That number is 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390. That'll connect you to the phone line to us. You can be on the show. You can be on the line. If there's anything, again, you would like to dive into that conversation, or if there's something else that we're talking about that brings you up or brings up some other questions in your mind, we're more than happy to discuss all of that, or any quick hitters, any one-line questions, anything along those lines. The text box is always open as well at 334-784-1067.
I'm getting dogged for this on the personal line too, for my fake love of James Franklin, and we're being told we're not allowed to talk bad about James Franklin. Shout out Steph for listening at the moment. We're not allowed to talk bad about him, so don't worry, we'll get there at some point. James Franklin will lose a game he's not supposed to, and I will go back to my rant about James Franklin.
That's fair. Steph, complete side note, and this is four total people will understand this. I've had a specific song stuck in my head since you sang karaoke, and it's not the Hamilton one. And it's,
I'm just glad you reintroduced yourself on the show today, so she knew who you were.
I'm not wearing my hat today, so Steph, I am Christian, and it's a pleasure to meet you over the radio waves here in town.
Okay, let's talk a little Auburn football, because the season starts now. The season begins right now for Auburn, and we've known this, right? We knew that game one was on its own. Game one was by itself. Baylor was everything. We sold it that way. It was promoted that way, and I think it's fair to say that Auburn played it that way.
Yeah.
You start 1-0 against a team that you were supposed to beat. All the narratives, all the storylines, yada, yada, yada. And Auburn handled business. Auburn did what they were supposed to do. You then got to come home and play two games against teams that you were better than, Ball State and South Alabama. You were able to work on some things. You were able to get a lot of players in. Unfortunately, you've had some injuries, and you're still trying to overcome those things. But you are 3-0 for the second time in the Hugh Freeze era. Last time you were 3-0, as many callers and texters reminded us of yesterday, it didn't go so well. And Auburn crashed and burned, flamed out from the sky and crash landed, okay? The season begins once more right now. Your 3-0 start was fantastic, but that's over now. You play real football right now, and it starts with Oklahoma in Norman on Saturday afternoon.
It's like what we talk about with teams that have their 7, 8, 9, 10 scripted plays coming out of a bye week or just coming into a game where you don't really need to huddle because you know what you're about to run. And it's like what we talked about with Tennessee and Georgia, where both teams just marched down the field effortlessly and found the end zone. And both teams did it, and we said, all right, there you go. Time to strap it up and play real big boy football right now on a field that's 120 yards wide and 53 and a third yard long. That's kind of where you're at right now. Did I say it? Yeah, 120 yards long and 53 and a half.
That's a wacky football
field.
It is.
Shout out Hudson Cock for the strange Australian football kicking regulations in the field that's oval-shaped. So, surprise for anybody. That's a new rule that's being implemented in college football.
Surprise.
Yes, you now run sideways. It's like sidekicks when you're warming up before gym class. But, man, it feels like just yesterday we were sitting there talking about that Baylor win and recapping and going, man, now we have 2 weeks to kind of sit back in our chairs a little bit and regroup and really enjoy the next couple of weeks. Well, that time has now come and gone. You mentioned it. Everybody knows Oklahoma is this weekend the 11th ranked team in the country, the 2:30 kickoff on ABC. We have confirmation as well that the following week you play the top 10 team. You play the 10th ranked Aggies of Texas A&M. That's also a 2:30 kickoff before you go back home, or you have the bye week before then. You're back home against the number 5th ranked team, the Georgia Bulldogs. That's the night game in Jordan-Hare before the very next week, 23rd ranked Missouri, who you will imagine that number continues to rise. That is the flex game, either the afternoon or a night game in Jordan-Hare. So these next 4 weeks, you're going to learn a lot about this team, and God forbid you have any sort of conversation where in 4 weeks from now you're right back where you started here at the beginning of the season.
Well, I'll double down. You said you're going to learn a lot about this Auburn team. I think you're going to learn everything about this Auburn team in the next four games in 5 weeks of time because of the bye week in there. You said it. At number 11, Oklahoma. At number 10, Texas A&M. Bye week. Home for number 5, Georgia, and home for number 23, Missouri. What those numbers look like between now and the games that they're played, I don't know. But Oklahoma's obviously not going anywhere. Texas A&M, who do they play this weekend? I forget. Texas A&M between now and the Auburn game. I'm getting their schedule pulled back up. Bear with me here. They play Mississippi State. No, apologies. They're on a bye this week.
They get to sit and watch.
We can't predict what the heck their ranking's going to be because it's the AP poll voters. They'll probably be ranked first by the time Auburn plays them next weekend. But they're not going down, I wouldn't think. Wouldn't think they would go down. But that doesn't mean anything. They're off. So other teams drop this week after not playing. So
it all depends on what Auburn does. Because if Auburn wins, they'll find a way to put Auburn at 10th and A&M at 9th. So it'll be a top 10 game. If Auburn loses, they'll just unrank A&M so that way the game has nothing, no matter anymore.
So if we at least stick with what we know, right? Oklahoma will be the 11th ranked team in the country when Auburn goes to Norman. Texas A&M should be a top 10 team when Auburn goes to Aggieland. Georgia will most likely be a top 5 team in the country if they can continue to win. And Missouri, I would like to think, will be a top 25 team by the time they make a trip to Auburn. We've talked about their schedule, the fact that their first 6 games of the year, they don't leave Como. And the fact that they absolutely could be 5-0, if not 6-0, playing South Carolina, UMass, and Alabama, okay? Those are Auburn's next 4 games. A&M, or Oklahoma, A&M, Georgia, Missouri, all ranked in the top 25. You are going to learn everything about this Auburn team. You're going to learn if Jackson Arnold's the real deal in this offense. You're going to learn if the offensive line can truly hold in the SEC and create these running lanes that they've done a really good job at the first 3 weeks. You're going to learn if this receiving core is the real deal. Can they get open? Can they make grabs and plays against SEC level DBs? Can this running back room get healthy, number one, and continue to be a force on the ground? And can the defense truly bend and not break? You will learn all of that in the next 4 weeks. And the point that I want to make in terms of the kickoff times, I mean, my goodness, Auburn got really lucky here. Like, really, really lucky. You play at Oklahoma, 2:30 kick, mid-afternoon. Not the early game, not a night game. You go to College Station, to play Texas A&M. 2:30 kick.
Which will be a bigger environment than Norman will bring.
Not the early kick, and it's not a night game. You get Georgia at home at night. We've talked about that. And the Missouri game at home will have lights on at some point. Because we already know, because of TV, it's either a mid-afternoon or it's a night game. Auburn couldn't have asked for a better situation in terms of the kickoff times and the environments and the situations that you're walking into, but I'll say it. This four-game stretch defines your season. It defines everything that you want to be in 2025, because I've been on record of saying, I don't care about games against Arkansas and Kentucky and Vanderbilt. If you can't start winning some of these games, I'm not saying you got to be 4-0, but if you can't win some of these games, I don't care about the Arkansas game.
No.
Sorry, I just don't.
We've talked since this schedule came out ad nauseum of how this stretch right here is the most difficult on paper, and I think even with the talent and everything and with the success of all four of these teams, this is the most difficult stretch of the season. We've talked about it, man. You get to that bye week, right? You have Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and then a bye week. I know that Georgia and Missouri are right there, so even if you throw that bye week in the middle, the front half of your schedule is the most difficult part. Even if you put the bye weeks where they are and you have five games, and two games, those first five games are the most difficult that you're going to play just because of the environment, because of how everything is going. You dodge those major, you get really, really lucky with the 2:30 kickoffs on the road in both games. Man. I mean, you're going to learn. I said so much. You said everything.
I think you will.
About this team. I'm really interested and really, I don't want to say stressed or worried, but run blocking has not been an issue for this team. Pass blocking at times has been a little bit. Part of that has been because Jackson has almost been told to kind of sit in the pocket for a little bit longer. Don't take any unnecessary hits. You can't do that anymore.
No.
It's going to be what you saw against Baylor, but you feel like it's going to be even more than that because we've talked about the strategies that Brent Venables you feel like is going to throw at Jackson Arnold. Or if he's smart, that will be what he's done. And shout out to Brent Venables on the way that he's attacked this game, because even in Atlanta at SEC Media Days, they were asking him questions, trying to get some of that bulletin quotes, trying to get any sort of clickable link and any quotes, anything that they could get from him. And he basically said, man, I have nothing but love for Jackson. He's going to go and be successful. We didn't put him in the right places and the opportunities to win a football game. That was what he said in Atlanta. They then asked him on Monday, you know, what does this return mean with Jackson Arnold coming to town? And he said, guys, like, to be completely honest, I love Jackson Arnold. I love his family. I love everything that he did for Oklahoma. I don't want to make this game about Jackson Arnold because, again, there is no bad blood whatsoever. This is Auburn and Oklahoma.
Before we get to break, and we're going to get to the phone lines when we come back here, do you think Jackson's reception is going to be good? And Norman, do you think the fans are going to boo him, applaud him, maybe not even address him? It's really the first time I've thought about that angle of all of this, because we get so focused, like you're talking about, with the coaching and the prospecting and well, Jackson knows the OU defense, but the OU defense knows him and all this stuff. Like, how do you think Norman accepts Jackson Arnold when he walks on the field on Saturday?
It'll be the Freddie Freeman treatment, in my opinion, going back to Truist Park in Atlanta, where it's about 75% applause. You have the couple people that are kind of just there that still have that lingering frustration, but he'll still get applauded because he doesn't have any bad blood, you don't feel like, with any of those guys. But as soon as you kick off,
yeah,
then he's going
to
hear it.
Students will give him hell.
Exactly. Yes.
Students will give it to him for sure. But that's what the students are supposed to do. I would expect nothing less from the SEC student section. Okay, let's get to our first break here in hour number one. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. We get to the phone lines when we come back. And have expectations changed on what's acceptable in these next four games? Oklahoma, Texas A&M, Georgia, and Missouri. What should Auburn's record be in those four games? We talk about that and get to the phone lines when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, let's get to the phone lines here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. They're open if you want to be a part of the show. We'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. Text box is open as well, 334-784-1067. But let's get to the phone lines, and believe Joe Bob is who we have on the phone lines now. What's going on? How are you?
Hey, good afternoon. Hey, I have no idea how we're going to do in the next four games, you know. But when I first saw the schedule come out, and I saw we had five games in a break. You know, I wasn't really thrilled about it. Mm. And then you look at Alabama, they always get a open date before their two biggest games of the year. Well, it sort of works out to your point earlier, Jacob. The scheduling, not to mention the time frame, works out for Auburn because we have a open date before we play Georgia, and basically we're going to have 3 weeks, with no disrespect to Mercer, to prepare for Alabama. So, you know, if we can come through this schedule 2-2, we have every right to expect a playoff opportunity.
Yeah.
At least, you know, to go on the road, you got to beat Arkansas and Vandy on the road. But I think 2-2 gets us right where we want to be, because if you're good enough to beat two of those four teams, you're good enough to beat anybody else on your schedule.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And a 2-2 stretch right here would make Auburn 5-2 with two top 25 wins, and at least one of those being in the top 15. Those are resume-building wins right there, and hopefully not considered bad losses either. And then, like you said, you got to handle business right against Arkansas, Kentucky, Mercer. And then you have two more opportunities. Vanderbilt's a top 25 team at the moment. We'll see if they are come November 8th. And then Alabama's kind of in the same boat, too. So, look, I'm with you. 2-2, make it look competitive, get a couple of nice wins, and then you are well on your way halfway through October. And, yeah, you're all the way into a college football playoff conversation, that is.
And you don't know that Baylor won't be ranked by then.
Yeah, that win, I believe that win will only get better as the year goes on.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Have a great day.
Appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Appreciate you holding on through the break as well. 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open, and we're answering the question, what are the expectations for the next four games? Because it's so funny, we really just now started including the Missouri game because it's ranked, right? Because it's at home. The idea has always been Oklahoma, Texas A&M, Georgia, right? What's the acceptable record in those three games? But I think Missouri should be included in this, because I truly believe that since Missouri has done what they've done already this season, which is a 3-0 start, a chance to go 4-0, hosting South Carolina at night this weekend, and then a chance to play Alabama before they play Auburn. I mean, Missouri's going to be a top 25 team when they walk into Jordan-Hare mid-afternoon or at night. And so I throw this question to you, and it is open to our listeners. Again, 334-321-1390 on the phone lines. What is an acceptable record in the next four games?
I think right now you brought it up here late last week, of if you could hand me, this was before we were talking a lot about Missouri, but just over this next three game stretch, if you could hand me 1-2 right now, or you have to go play every one, would you take it? And man, it's such a difficult question, because there's obviously so much that goes into it of, okay, well, if you take 1-2 and you go beat Oklahoma, dang it, now I know what's coming the next two of 3 weeks with the bye week in between.
Two-game losing streak with Missouri coming to town.
Exactly,
too.
Yes. 2-2, however, feels a whole lot better than 1-2 does over this four-game stretch, simply because it shows that regardless if you're on the road or at home, that you know how to beat quality teams, and you can do it, even if those come from the standpoint of you go 0-2 on the road and then you go back and win back-to-back games at home.
For me, weirdly enough, when I posed that question, because it was posed to me on the on the next three games, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and Georgia, Doug was the one, Doug Amos of the Max Roundtable, he was the one that proposed the question to me and said, would you take 1-2 in the next three games, or do you play them and take the result that happens? And at the time, I said, coming out of these three games, I said, yeah, let Auburn play. Let Auburn play Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and Georgia, and give me the result that comes from it, because I think Auburn can absolutely win one, and I think you have a chance to win two. But my answer changes just a little bit when you include Missouri in there. And yes, some of it is Missouri, and some of it is just another top 25 game at the back end of this stretch. If that question, that same question were proposed to me, rather than it being, would you take 1-2 in your next three, would you take 2-2 in your next four if you're Auburn? My answer is yes. My answer is yes, I do. And quite honestly, I don't care which two.
No.
If you're cherry picking, yeah, beat Georgia. If you're cherry picking. But to be quite honest, give me any two. Because you said it, that guarantees you have two quality wins. Missouri's not losing three games before they get here. They're not losing more than two. And that's if South Carolina just magically figures it out on offense this weekend and Alabama runs them out of town. But I don't see either one of those things happening. Not yet.
No.
So Oklahoma would be a quality win, obviously. A&M would be a quality win, obviously. Georgia would be a quality win. And Missouri would be a quality win. So my answer, yeah, is would I take 2-2 rather than playing all four and seeing how they play out? Yes, I would. I would take 2-2 in that scenario.
Doubling down on this conversation before the music kicks us out of here in about 20 seconds, you have six ranked games as of right now. Is 3-3 acceptable?
In terms of what? Acceptable for what?
Acceptable just overall for the Auburn Tigers 2025 season, because I want to show you again. This might be something you answer on the other side of the break. But if I were to tell you, you start 3-0 before the year, and then you go 3-3, and Auburn gets that ninth win in the regular season, you tell me without a doubt, yes. But now it's the way the fan base works, the way that football works. Of man, you start 3-0, man. Now 3-3 against those teams doesn't feel as good, and nine wins feels like a little bit of an underwhelming story.
I'll give you my answer when we come back. Plus, we get to the phone lines, the text box as well. We're having fun on a Tuesday afternoon. You tell us, what should Auburn do in their next three games, next four games, the rest of the way? What's acceptable to you? Give us a call, 334-321-1390. Shoot us a text in the text box as well at 784-1067. We continue this conversation right after this.
Extra, extra. The referral perks just doubled at Dixie. Now through November 30th, get $50 for you and $50 off for your friend when you refer them to Dixie. That's a $100 value. Current Dixie customers get 10% off any repair just for being loyal. Dixie Cares plan members get an unbeatable 20% off. Plus, you can finance anything over $250. Double the rewards, double the savings.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We got a lot to get to in the next 30 minutes. Couple of phone calls, several texters in our On the Line text box as well. I want to answer your question really quickly, Christian, that you proposed going to break before we get to everybody who's involved with the show, and we appreciate them for being involved with the show. You said Auburn has six ranked games remaining on the schedule this season, and that is true.
Those being at Oklahoma, at Texas A&M, home for Georgia, home for Missouri, on the road in Nashville at Vanderbilt, back home against Alabama.
And the question is, right now, would I take Auburn going 3-3 in those six ranked games? On this Tuesday afternoon, with Auburn being 3-0, but going into their toughest game yet, I'm taking 3-3. Yes, I am taking 3-3 in those six games as of right now. Folks, that gives Auburn a 9-win season. That's what you asked for preseason. That's what you asked for all summer long.
If they don't
slip up
against Arkansas and Kentucky.
Correct. Yes. I think those expectations are allowed to change with good performance in the next several games. But that's a conversation for a different time. Let's get to the phone lines right now. 334-321-1390. I believe we have Greg. You're on line one. What's up, my friend?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's on your mind?
Well, I'm sitting there listening to it. Usually I like to be a voice of reason on it, but I'm gonna shoot you straight.
Okay.
You know, we sit there and talk about the next four games. You're gonna find out in the next two games whether you, like you said, you'll take 3-3. I hate to say it like this, but yeah, I take 3-3 because I'm just being honest with you. I ain't got a lot of faith in Hugh Freeze and how he calls the game because I feel like you're pretty much your dress rehearsal that you just had. It was underwhelming. What I wanted to see, I didn't think we wasn't going to win the games. I was a little nervous about Baylor. Mm-hmm. You give up 400 through the air, still found a way to win it. I think South Alabama is another dress rehearsal for a Vanderbilt, the way they like to hold the ball. They seem like they've done the same things like a Vanderbilt team does.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But I just want to see – I really wanted to see Auburn, which I can appreciate you taking what's given. And I know we can run the ball and all this. And I really wanted to see Arnold push the ball down the field when – they was taking it away, trying to take it away from him a little bit. And I just, for everything we've heard about these receivers and all that, I'm going to say it. I'm a Cam Coleman fan, but you got to run every route in the tree, and I don't see him coming over the middle like he needs to. So I'm just saying I really want to see the moxie of this team. I want to see a hard-nosed Auburn team. And I don't know, maybe they was holding something back, keeping it basic, keeping it simple, because look who you're practicing against in practice. But facts are the facts. Center of our defense is soft as a sponge. And, you know, we got some young kids there that's got to grow up, and you're going to find out in the next 2 weeks. And, yeah, I'll take 3-3, but in the next 2 weeks, you might be sitting there saying, please, God, just let me get through it.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to tell you this. There's going to be a lot of teams in the SEC this year. It's going to be an 8-win ball clubs because there's a lot of parity right there around, you know, the mid-pack and up of what could happen. So it could go either way. I think we got the talent to beat them. Hugh Freeze and I don't know. It just seems like he caused play scared based off of the pass and what he had, and I can get that. But, you know, I don't care what anybody says. You want a championship, you got to be able to do that at a better clip than 50%. And
sure,
you need to know what you can do, especially going into Oklahoma with Jackson Arnold and where his mental is going to be at. But, hey, you know, I'm being pessimistic about it, but we're going to see what happens next 2 weeks. To me, it's going to tell me and should tell every Auburn fan out there what you're just going to get used to with Hugh Freeze, because I think he can do it. We're going to see if he can do it. So
we're going to see. That's right. That's right.
Eagle.
Appreciate the call, Greg. Thank you for holding on. We appreciate you and your time. I think the moral of that phone call, Christian, and correct me if I misheard this, I think he's in still see it to believe it mode. I think there are still things that need to be proven by this Auburn team, this Auburn coaching staff, this Auburn program, and he's probably not alone with the Auburn fan base. I'm sure there are lots of other fans, and I think that's probably smart, because I hope we haven't come on here and said, Auburn's 3-0, man, playoffs are bust, here we go, this is a playoff team, because that's not it. That's not the case, not yet, because to his points, yeah, you still gave up a bunch of yards against Baylor. Jackson Arnold got sacked 4 or 5 times against Ball State, and South Alabama had chances to win that football game Saturday. Those are all true statements, but everything is still in front of you. Him in particular, Greg, and a lot of other fans, I assume, are still waiting to see some things be proven. And that's okay. I think that's okay.
I agree. I mean, you're at the point of right now, the Baylor game, although it's not an equal comparison, is almost that Kentucky game of, okay, there was the play calling, there was what you needed to do, can you see things get flipped? Can you see things get turned around? And then you saw what happened the very next week inside Jordan-Hare. That's kind of that middle ground that you're at right now where, yeah, I think you are still at see it to believe it mode, and I don't think that's a bad thing at all.
And it's okay to be worried about the games that are on this schedule because it is going to be tough against Oklahoma, A&M, Georgia, Missouri. Arkansas will be tough, Vanderbilt will be tough, and Alabama will be tough. It's okay to be worried about those games, but it's also okay to have confidence, too. 334-321-1390. We get to the phone lines again. And Terry, you're on the line. How's it going, my man? Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, Jake. Christian, how y'all doing?
Doing good. Well. Good to hear from you.
Good to talk to y'all. I want to change the subject a little bit. Earlier on the show, y'all were talking about Dabo Swinney.
Yeah. Unfortunately. No way you have thoughts on this, Terry.
Yeah, I do.
Let it rip.
I thought he was going to be the natural replacement in Alabama for DeBoer.
Yeah.
But I don't think so anymore.
For Saban or for DeBoer?
DeBoer.
Okay, you thought he was going to be the second behind Saban. You thought Saban would leave, they would find somebody who was doomed to fail, like Kalen DeBoer, and then it was going to be Dabo Swinney.
Right.
Okay.
But I don't think that no more. I don't. I think his attitude toward the transfer portal and his unwillingness to participate in it, that's just today's game. That's just the way the game is played now. And that's the way the system works. And his refusal to do it is going to cost him.
I think that's a really good point. And I think for a guy that has finally, or so we thought, Terry, finally given in to the idea of NIL and transfer portal, and he does. I think they brought in three guys through the portal this offseason, and they believe Clemson does. They believe in paying players for a true NIL evaluation, right? You show up, you perform, we'll pay you off of that, which is what it was supposed to be in the beginning, just to remind folks. But it clearly doesn't work that way. And if Dabo Swinney walked in to the office at Alabama and he just opened up the checkbook or just opened up the receipts, he would pass out. He wouldn't know what to do with the money that they're throwing around in Tuscaloosa or in Columbus or in Eugene or in any of the College Station, any of these places that are throwing around money like it ain't nothing. Dabo Swinney would have a heart attack. He would. And so I think that's a good point. I'm saying he's going to have to adjust because if his time is up at Clemson or if he does move on, because he claimed, Terry, that he'll go coach somewhere else. He doesn't need Clemson. He'll go coach somewhere else. I'm with you. I don't think it's Alabama.
Yeah, I agree with what you guys said. It sounded like a little spoiled kid.
I 100% agree with that.
So
it's like entitled narcissism.
Yeah, I mean he's got it made at Clemson. He's considered somewhat royalty there, but the natives get restless and things happen. So, but I for a long time thought he was a natural replacement, but not anymore. Don't.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that ship has sailed on both parties, on both accounts. I think Dabo probably wouldn't go to Alabama, and Alabama may not go after Dabo.
Hey, can we officially change his name from Dabo to Dumbo now?
I'll let you run with that, Terry.
Take care, guys.
Thanks so much. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. That's interesting because you remember down the stretch of the Saban era when we knew that it was almost over.
There were talks.
And look, Dabo's an Alabama guy. That's who he is. It's in his blood. It's literally in his soul is Alabama. Alabama football, the Alabama Crimson Tide. Dabo is an Alabama guy. And that was the thought was when Saban's done, they'll just go get Dabo. They'll just go get him. Because if you can win at Clemson, you can win at Alabama, right? But I said for so long, I said Dabo at the time, Dabo would be dumb to have left Clemson when Saban was done and walked into Tuscaloosa. Why? Because I've said for years that person was doomed to fail, destined to fail.
We've talked about it. The job in between the Saban and the second person would be the worst job ever, unless DeBoer is able to turn it around this season or maybe next year, which we don't know if he is or not. But the job after could be the best job in the world, just because of the realities and the understandings kind of being turned back on to normalcy.
But I agree with Terry's thoughts right there where he said if Dabo is to move on and go coach somewhere else because, Clemson was just so mean to him then he is going to have to change, unless he wants to go fail somewhere or just be a mediocre head coach at a mediocre program. If he wants to be the next Deion Sanders, then don't change the way you're thinking, Dabo. Do exactly what you're doing, and you can be the next Deion and go coach at a program that doesn't mean anything, that's already fallen off the face of the earth.
And that's what I talked about when you brought it up initially, was just the idea that you feel like if, and again, this is not, we are not saying that Dabo is leaving Clemson right now or at the end of the season, whatever the case is, but if that were to be the case, we're allowed to speculate and talk about it. Clemson, you feel like, would almost feel rejuvenated with a fresh start because of the way college football works, rather than the baggage that's coming with Dabo Swinney just because of everything of how outspoken he's been with the media of whatever fan base and whatever team is getting with him. You have to naturally almost bear some of that frustration just because of the lack of the ability or the stubbornness to not change anything the way you've gone about college football over the last 15 years.
And I think some of it is Clemson. I think some of it is the Clemson people, but I think a lot of it's Dabo because he's very outspoken about it. I mean, it goes back to the thing we've known so long about him, and I'm not saying that what I'm about to say is right or wrong. It's just how Dabo has run his program. But when you committed to Clemson, you didn't go visit anywhere else, right? You didn't take official visits. You didn't talk to the coaches. You committed was committed. And I respect him for holding that standard because that's extremely hard to do. But clearly, things like that don't work anymore. And I hate that.
Which is unfortunate because we both talked about it at the beginning of the show and have talked about it plenty of times before of you hope that it works with Dabo and Clemson just so that way there's that other side of the road that people can take of, yeah, there's $30 million rosters that can try and win national championships. Oh, there's also this side that works just as well.
Yeah, it's that white horse that says, yeah, this does still work. It can still happen at the biggest and highest levels of college football. But, Terry, great comments there. And if you missed a lot of our previous comments and conversations on Dabo, we talked about it earlier in the show. You can go and catch it with the podcast version at ESPNAU.com later today. A couple of people that texted in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067, before we get to break. One person says that we would have taken Talkin' Auburn fans, going back to our conversation of the next four games or the six ranked games that are on Auburn's schedule. This person says Auburn would have taken nine wins before the season. Auburn fans would have taken nine wins before the season.
Yeah.
Sitting at three right now, should get Kentucky and Mercer, should. That's five. Just need to go 4-3 in the other seven games. Doesn't matter how, just like basketball, bank up the wins. Stack them up. Prove that you can get those wins is what this texter is saying. And look, I think I agree. But again, I will go into it because I think your expectations are allowed to change. But what your note is, Christian, and kind of your message, I believe, is don't forget how the summer was. Don't forget what the feelings were going into this season where Hugh Freeze's job is still up for grabs. It's still on the line. There are still things to be proven, which is what a previous caller was saying. Just because you beat Baylor, the world is not complete here. Yeah. There's still a lot to prove.
There's not this ultimate comfort in the chair anymore. And like we said earlier, God forbid in 4 weeks from now or 5 weeks from now, we're having the conversation of, oh, well, Let's talk about what we talked about over the summer. Let's talk about what the fan base was begging for at the end of last year. Things like that. You obviously hope that that does not happen. But yes, my mindset is still, it's almost the remember where you came from type of mindset of half the fan base would have taken eight last year, if not nine. The bare minimum is be in a conversation mid to late November of being delusional enough to feel like you're one of the 25 fan bases that can fit into that 12-team spot. Whether you make it or not, get to that point. And when October and November come around, if you have that seventh win and you're flirting with eight, then all of a sudden you're flirting with nine, that 3-3 spot doesn't feel ultimately that bad, regardless of if those expectations change throughout the season.
This texter says, and then we got to get to break, which is the harder game, Auburn at home versus Missouri or Auburn on the road at Arkansas. Those games are back-to-back. Missouri at the end of this tough three-game stretch, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, bye week, Georgia, then you're home against Missouri. And then the very next week, you go on the road to Arkansas. What's the tougher game? Home versus what is now top 25 Missouri or on the road in Fayetteville against Arkansas?
I'll answer that when we come back.
Do we have an answer on the Arkansas game time? It's an early kick.
It's the 11 a.m. kick.
It's the 11 a.m. kick in Fayetteville. We'll answer that when we come back and wrap up the show here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stick around.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We appreciate you being with us. Been a fun show today. If you missed any of it, be sure to go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. It's on our station website at ESPNAU.com. You can also find it wherever you get your podcast. And we've talked a lot of college football today. Week 3 reactions, coaches throwing temper tantrums, and talked a little high school as well. Christian sat down with Buster Daniel, the head coach of Lee Scott Academy football. We've talked about Auburn's upcoming schedule. Great conversations, phone calls, text messages, a whole lot of fun here on today's show. And we end it with a question that is a look-ahead question, yes, but one that I think is fascinating from one of our texters. And they asked us, for Auburn, which one is the tougher game? At home against Missouri following the Georgia game, or on the road at Arkansas right after the Missouri game? So at or home against Missouri or at Arkansas, which one of those is a tougher game to you, Christian?
My answer, which we kind of talked about before this question was official, was the Arkansas game, in my opinion. But I don't think it's necessarily because of the team that you're playing, right? If you walk in to Jordan-Hare Stadium on the 18th after beating Georgia, I don't think it's I don't think you have to worry about this Auburn team getting up to play this Missouri team. I think even if you lose, I think it's a chance to get back right and pick up another very quality win against probably a top 15 team in the country when Missouri walks into Jordan-Hare.
Which is crazy to think,
but it could end up being a very big win, a very good win. So I don't think this game you have to worry about this team not showing up. But I think mentally right now, and I know that the players and the coaches are taking it one game at a time, but the players know that this next four-game stretch is going to be the toughest part. It is going to be an absolute gauntlet. And you hope that it doesn't happen, but you've seen it time after time, and it just kind of happens with the way of the world of as soon as you get done, mentally you relax just a little bit. Then you make the trip out to Fayetteville for an 11 a.m. game with Talen Green, who could be 2-5 on a five-game losing streak just because of Arkansas's schedule. But man, does that not feel like it has trap game written all over it? The second that Auburn lets their foot off the gas after that stretch of 2-2, 3-1, 1-3, whatever the case may be. But Arkansas, five-game losing streak, they have nothing to play for anymore. Feel like you've seen that story a time or two.
Good news is Auburn's track record in Fayetteville is pretty darn good, especially in early kickoffs.
That, and you feel like, at least as of right now, you stop Arkansas twice and you win the game.
That's the question. If you don't, though, they can hang 80 on you before you blink. So those games will be fun, but there's a lot to do and a lot to play for between now and then. We continue talking all this and more coming up on tomorrow's show. We get Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 to talk about Georgia's comeback win over Tennessee, and Daryl Dapritz joins us from Locked On Auburn and the Barn. That's on tomorrow's show, 2-4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.